Welcome to Healthcare and Hire, a podcast for healthcare professionals and aspiring healthcare executives looking for information, association, and inspiration from higher-level leaders across the healthcare industry. I'm Iqbal Acha, career consultant, healthcare recruiter, and registered pharmacist. Every week, I sit down to interview healthcare executives, clinical leaders, medical entrepreneurs, and industry experts to learn how they got to where they are today, what they see as the future of healthcare, and what they're doing to make healthcare more accessible, affordable, and effective. Let's find out more about today's guest. Dr. Prathil Lal is the Senior Director of Medical and Professional Affairs for Warby Parker. He leads the entire eye care and vision services department, which includes both employee and sublease optometrists, while playing a strategic role in guiding the organization towards holistic eye and vision care. Before joining Warby Parker, Dr. Lal was a Director of Health and Wellness for Walmart, where he was responsible for optometric relations, operations management, business development, professional education, and clinical training. He also lived and worked in Canada, having served as the chair for both doctor mentorship and customer experience development for Iris, the visual group. Dr. Lal holds a Doctor of Optometry degree from the University of Waterloo and an MBA from Queen's University. He is passionate about leadership development, doctor experience, and is always looking for innovative ways to improve the quality, affordability, and access to eye care. Hello, Dr. Lal. Welcome to the Healthcare and Hire podcast.
Hello. Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to have this chat with you.
Me too. It's been quite a bit of work for us to get to where we are right now. I think this is our third attempt at this. So as you said, third time's a charm.
Third time's a charm. That's right. Excellent. It'll all be worth it, no doubt.
Beautiful. I'm sure it will. I know who you are and I know the value that you bring. So man, I cannot wait to tap into your experiences and your insights and share it with the audience. Some of the listeners, I'm sure, are familiar with who you are. Others are meeting you for the first time. Why don't we take this opportunity and have you introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about who you are, what your role is, and how do you take healthcare to a higher level?
Absolutely. So my name is Prathil. I'm an optometrist by trade. Currently work for a company called Warby Parker, which many of your listeners probably know about. My role with the company is essentially Senior Director for Medical and Professional Affairs. I'm involved in a few different things, but the key one is that I get to work with a massive group of optometrists, eye care professionals that do amazing work looking after their patients. So I'm involved a little bit on some of the day-to-day doctor operations for the company. Importantly, also work with different teams on some of our eye care strategy, our professional relations with different organizations, some of the regulatory pieces that come with it, really growing that eye care business. You know, where Warby Parker was started as an online company initially, but as we grow and as we add more and more doctor locations across, we are obviously looking for the right type of doctor to ensure that we can provide the best-in-class care for our patients and for our customers as well. So prior to Warby Parker, I was with Walmart for several years, which is where Iqbal, we met each other. We were there around the same time. So my role was a little bit different in that I also had responsibility for pharmacy as well too. And having that experience, was great because I was able to see it in healthcare from different professions, not just on the optometry or optical side, but from pharmacists as well too. And you know, I love our pharmacy colleagues as well too. It was great to be able to take some of the learnings from the pharmacy side and be able to apply it to the optometry side and vice versa as well in that.
You know, I think there's a lot of people that have heard of Warby Parker. I know that my first foray of them, of course, was when we were working together at Walmart. But for additional context, your organization now has 160 physical stores across the United States and Canada, even though you originally started out as an online eyewear company. And I don't know how many people have read this story or are familiar, but I mean, this is the brainchild of four Wharton Business School of Business graduates who came up with the idea of, you know, why are eyeglasses and eye frames so expensive? Why don't we make it more accessible and more affordable for people across the country? And they just designed this while they were in our business school. And the beauty of this was that the idea was so well received. Like, it was actually like pre-launched in a way. I know the news was picked up by GQ, by Vogue, and in less than 48 hours of its website actually being launched. I don't know if the system crashed, but you have 20,000 people already waiting in line for an idea to be able to order eyeglasses and have it shipped. Pioneer in this space. And to be honest, you know, my first introduction to this was when my wife was looking for glasses. And, you know, the idea of being able to, I believe it's called your home try-on program, where you can have five frames shipped to your own home for free. You have the ability to try them on and you keep what you like. You return the rest at no cost. I mean, this is revolutionary, and it still happens to be, you know, a pinnacle of success for a lot of other organizations that are looking to break the norm.
No, I agree. And, you know, almost every week, sometimes on a daily basis, you'll hear that, you know, the Warby Parker of so-and-so has come out and the Warby Parker of this has come out as well, too, which we take with a grain of salt, but we love that comparison, obviously. And I think Warby Parker has been an innovator in so many different things. And then really was one of the reasons that I joined the company. I loved that innovative spirit, and the home try-on is a great example, and we have other examples of that as well too. But going back to as you mentioned, you know, started online being flagged in some of the magazines. They made the target for the year, the plan for the year within 3 weeks of launching as well. So it's such an amazing start story that I'm always in awe of how the company started and from where it started to where it is right now. You mentioned earlier 160 locations, more locations, about 110 or so with the exam rooms right now. And that number will continue to grow as we add more exam rooms to some of our other locations, but also as we add new locations as well to all of these come automatically with exam rooms and fantastic optometrists and eye doctors as well.
So let's talk a little bit about that, Prathil, because I know that right now, you know, it's a very competitive market. Working in healthcare talent acquisitions, I know that, you know, with this great resignation, the last 2 years, so many people that have had the opportunity and the means to retire have chosen to do that. And the number of professionals that are either choosing to walk away from their roles today just because of the pandemic and a variety of other reasons has really caused quite a bit of consternation against recruiting teams across every discipline, whether we were talking optometry, pharmacy, medicine, nursing. But, you know, as an organization today, your role is, as you pointed out, you know, your company is in growth mode. You're looking at expanding the services and location sites, which means you need more high quality optometrists and high quality opticians. And that means Warby Parker, while it has its legacy in its ability to be an innovator, you still need to be able to find ways to attract top talent and best in class. How do you go about presenting Warby Parker as an employer of choice? What are some of the things that distinguish Warby Parker from other brick and mortar and online eyewear companies that would say, to make an optometrist and or an optician says, you know, I would really like to learn more about this company because I think there's a good alignment for me to work for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great question. I think it's something that's top of mind for a lot of organizations. And it's one of the key things we've always wanted to be. We wanted to be an employer of choice for every profession, whether it's optometry, opticianry, a store and field leadership team on the software engineering side as well, too. But specifically for optometry, there's quite a few things that we've done that that we think that our doctors will like. Fortunately, we haven't seen the same challenges that I think some of our competitors have, some of it by design, hopefully. But I think there's a few things that really keep us separate and hopefully above our competition and really differentiate us. Obviously, like probably many other places, we provide, great pay, amazing benefits, lots of time off for work-life balance. But beyond that, I think it's our mission that's a critical part as well too, right? Our mission is to provide vision for all. So we have, as a company, multiple initiatives. Our buyer pay, giver pay, as an example, is a great one, which we partner with different organizations like Vision Spring. And for every pair that's purchased, we provide a pair to people in need. Just over 8 million already distributed as well too, which is amazing for a company that's about 11 years old. Apart from that, we have our pupils project where we provide eye care and eyeglasses for free to students in need in various cities. I think we're up to 5 different cities right now, more to come over the next few months as well. And it's such a, it's a population that really needs that eye care, right? We've partnered with a doctor in John Hopkins who's been doing some studies on this, which absolutely shows the importance of intervention, early intervention with eye care for kids of this age. Apart from that, we have other initiatives as well too. So whether it's our voting alliance, whether it's our racial equity strategy. So I think the core values that we share is a huge part of that. I think our ODs really see that. I think the fact that it's not something we just talk about, it's not something that that we just provide lip service. It's an integral part of the company. It's really part of the DNA of the company from its day one. And I think our ODs see that and see the importance that we place on that. And I think that has been a key part as well too. I think the fact that we really are sort of pivoting a little bit apart from the core values, I think the fact that we really look for feedback from our doctors as well has been key. We get lots of feedback from them. We try to ensure that we're removing obstacles for them, try to make sure that we have an amazing environment for them. When we survey our doctors, we do twice a year engagement surveys. It's one of the key things that they tell is they love the teams that they work with. And that's a key part as well. We want to make sure, we spend so much time at work, we want to make sure the teams that we're working with are great friends for us as well too. When we do our engagement survey, we take it seriously. It's not just another survey that's done, we look at the results and move on, but we take it super seriously. We spend lots of time on it and we try to make sure that we continue to drive that engagement. I think the fact that our engagement scores remain significantly at the higher end each time gives us the emphasis that we're moving in the right direction. We have, I think, what I believe to be the lowest attrition rate of doctors in the industry, which is another good sign that we're doing something right. But I think the other part is that we can't just depend on that, right? Just something we've done before. So we continually have to move fast. It's like that old line, old saying about evolution, right? You're running faster and faster just to keep in place. I think trying to make sure that we have initiatives to continue to drive that engagement, to continue to attract great candidates as well. The other thing is, a growing organization, we're also able to provide a lot of different opportunities for our doctors. You know, a lot of them are looking for things beyond just the exam room, and whether it's more leadership opportunities on the business side of things, on the management side of things, or whether it's more opportunities on different pilots and projects and trying out new equipment, new contact lenses, glasses, and things like that. So they love the innovation part, the fact that we are tech forward, have amazing equipment, and more to come as well too. So I think all of these factors play a part, but the key things I think that really stand out is that we really want to do what's right for them. And we hope that our candidates, OD candidates, see that when we're talking to them.
I like the way that that's presented, Prathil, because I think that there's a combination of what we do and what we hear and how we, you know, pivot to match our employees' needs. You know, you mentioned this earlier about doing doctor surveys to ensure that, you know, their needs are being heard. And as an organization, you know, if you just continue to move in one direction without receiving feedback, timely right. feedback, no less, you know, you end up becoming stagnant, stale, and forgotten. So I'm glad to hear that Warby Parker recognizes that and values that as well. You know, and speaking of which, you know, I want to call this out because I know in September of last year, Warby Parker went public. And that's a very, you know, very powerful and proud moment, I'm sure, for you and all of the associates at Warby Parker. But the experience, like, going through that is very unique. Not a lot of companies begin as, you know, small startups and progress and grow to that size. Could you share some insights in terms of the experiences that you had, you know, working through that kind of change? And what sort of messaging did you need to be able to convey to internal associates, potential candidates, external customers? Like, how does that, it's an experience that most people will never have the opportunity to view. So whatever you can share in that space, because I think the listeners that are, you know, tuning into this episode today would want to know, like, mostly you either work for a big company and it's already set up, you work for a small company and it just kind of stays that way. But here is a, you know, an entity that has had the opportunity to experience massive growth and success. But there's a lot of internal things that happen that most people will never see. We'd love to kind of tap into that and kind of get your take on what that was like.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it was an amazing time, honestly. It was an exciting time for the company and for the entire team. It's a, you know, entry into a new chapter, really. And there's a few things that had to be changed. Obviously, we couldn't share and be transparent about a lot of the financial performance, you know, with regards to financial regulations and things like that. But personally for me, you know, super exciting. I was very honored to be also invited to go to our public listing day as well too. So I got to go with the leadership of the company and several other folks to the New York Stock Exchange on the day that we listed, which was a whole different experience altogether. Definitely something that I wasn't expecting to be able to be a part of. You know, from the announcement internally to all the changes that we had to put in play, in particular on some of the legal side, the financial side, but also the fact that, you know, we were able to provide the guidance to our team that this would be a new chapter for us, but that things really wouldn't change a lot, right? All our core values, as an example, we still remain committed to the same core values that have guided our culture since the beginning, and they'll continue to do so as well, even as a public company. So, you know, a lot of our daily operations didn't change. We're still trying to make sure we're providing the same great experience to our patients and customers. But with this came the ability to grow even further, to expand our business further. And at the same time, I think be able to do some of those do-good efforts on a bigger scale as well, and maybe on a more public scale as well too. An example is that even though we went public, our company did set up a charity as part of this as well too, and We were classified as a beneficial company, a public benefit corporation, essentially. One of the very few companies that that have this designation. And it's essentially a legal structure for business that empowers the business to pursue positive stakeholder impacts, not just alongside the profit and shareholders, but also other stakeholders as well too. So whether that's our employees, whether that's the other groups that we do our do-good efforts with as well too. So I think that was a signal that, you know, even though we were going public, our focus still remains on those core values. And I think that really created a lot more excitement that, you know, sure, we would have to change in some of our operations. Our core values, our focus still remains the same. And if anything, it will mean that we might be able to actually even amplify these services as well. But it was an amazing experience, no doubt. We had a lot of our team come out. There was a broadcast that went out to all of our employees so that those that couldn't attend were able to view all the proceedings as well, too. We had a little bit of a gathering at the end of the day as well. And it was just such a nice opportunity to see and meet people that, you know, started the company, had been with the company for a while, and hear their stories as well too. But we are excited about what the future holds for us. I think this is only one chapter, an exciting chapter, no doubt, but only one chapter in as part of our growth.
Prathil, I think one of the things that I want to know, because, you know, you've explained in great detail about some of the things that your company has done to, you know, work through a lot of these changes that it's been going through, and it's been very successful. I'd like to have a better understanding of maybe something that you have done, you and your team, that maybe in a recent last few months, years, outside of the scope of the company going public, like, where do you focus most of your time, energy, and effort, and maybe a recent success that you would like to share with the audience that you feel very proud of having elevated the brand of Warby Parker or the mission of the organization?
Yeah, I think a key one that comes to mind is our racial equity strategy, and you know, with all the issues and that we had around racial equity over the last couple of years, and this already being a core value of Warby Parker. One of the things we looked at is how do we include that as part of optometry and opticianry as well too, and a key opportunity and maybe a failure really is of African American ODs in the profession. And, you know, African Americans, Black Americans make up about 13% of the population here in the United States, but somewhere between 2 to 3% of OD population, which is remarkably low, obviously. And, and there's various reasons for this. And it's part of our strategy, our racial equity strategy, our 10-point strategy, which is on our website for anyone who's interested. It's fairly detailed. One of the things we looked at was where could we make the most impact and how could we ensure that we were able to help the number of Black optometrists in the United States grow with some of our partners. And a key part is that the cost of the education, obviously, right? And that's definitely a barrier. Awareness about the profession has been a barrier as well, too. And as you know, the quality of care is also an impact as well, too, right? We know that some of the populations that are impacted will have lower quality of care as well too. So they all sort of go hand in hand, and it was super important for us to be able to do something about it. And it's part of our strategy with regards to optometry in particular. One of the things we did is that we created a Warby Parker scholarship with the New England College of Optometry in Boston, Massachusetts. Our first two scholarships were are now in place in 2020. We have two students that will have a full ride through the four-year program through New England College of Optometry, one of our partners, and you know, probably one of the top schools, if not the top school of optometry. And in for 2021, we've expanded that now, so it's a total of four scholarships, just over $700,000 in cost in terms of the monetary value over the next 4 years as well. So something we're super proud of, something that we hope will spark change in the industry. I think there's still a lot of work to be done. And we work with different partners, whether it's NECO or Black Eye Care Perspective, which has what's called the 13% promise. And this is a group of an organization started by a group of Black optometrists that have been trying to create awareness about the profession. And we've done some work with them as well too. So I think this was something that was really really important to be able to start thinking about, to be able to start doing, and to create that awareness, but also to start, hopefully, again, as I mentioned earlier, spark change in the industry. Since then, we've had a couple other organizations that have started some of that work as well, too, of providing different types, different levels of support. And we hope to be able to continue on this path as well. But this was something that I think was very well received by all of our optometrists, I think the wider optometry community as well, as well as the rest of the employees of the company as well. It's something that you know, I remain pretty proud of, to be able to play a small part in that rollout.
Prithil, you're also at a very good opportunity to see how changes are coming down the pike for the optical industry, both from an eye care and an eye health perspective. And I'm sure Warby Parker is also ahead of this curve by looking at ways to being able to continue to make its products and services more affordable and accessible. But what are some big things that are going to impact the entire optical and eye care or eye health industry? Are there things that you see that are coming down the pike that more and more organizations are starting to prepare for? And if so, what do those changes look like for the individual practitioner that's going to be working in a world that will look potentially different in 2027?
Yeah, I think that's a super interesting question, something I spent a lot of time thinking about. I think, you know, the world's changed a lot in the last couple of years, and you know, from a healthcare perspective, I think we've seen a significant rise in telemed, and I have no doubt that, you know, we'll see some fluctuations in telemed, but it's here to stay, right? And so I think that's going to be one of the main things that we'll see, and I think not just in optometry, but across different healthcare professions as well too. I read a stat somewhere that the amount of change, the amount of uptake of telemed that was expected to happen in 10 years happened in about 2 years. So significant rise there. And I think there will be more of that to come. And I think as different organizations sort of test and figure out what's working. I think from our perspective, you know, I think it's important for us. One of the things we do is we like to find solutions to patient and customer pain points as well. We think of ourselves as experience focused but channel agnostic, and from a Warby Parker perspective, we really do think of ourselves as omnichannel more than anything, right? And so what that means is that we're really focused on the patient and customer experience, but less concerned about the channel itself. So we want to be able to provide our patients safe and affordable, convenient choices, meet them where they are, and whether that's online on our site or on our app as well. And from a optometry perspective as well, too, during the period of COVID, we were able to roll out fairly quickly virtual vision consultations, where patients were able to have consultations with our doctors, especially for emergency issues and things like that. We obviously have our brick and mortar locations where we have doctors, but also at the same time, we also have a telemed option called virtual vision test. And I think you know, something that helps drive safety, but also affordable access to vision care as well too. And this allows us to be able to improve that access to care, but at the same time, make sure that it's still a safe environment. and be able to figure out, okay, does this patient need something beyond just that that telemedicine, that refraction option there? Apart from that, I think we will continue to see the rise of more technology in terms of equipment, in terms of EMR, as well in the organization as well too. I think the makeup of your optometrists will also change. I think a lot of ODs are looking for more work-life balance, working for employers that really do care about them and not just say that they care about them as well. And I think that demographic change might also bring about a change, whether it's how we practice, where we have our locations, where recent new grads or even experienced grads go to work as well too. And I think a good example of this is during the during 2020 when we were closed, our brick and mortar locations were closed. And we rolled out the telemed options, but during that period of time, we still continued to pay all of our ODs. They were still on the payroll during that period of time, and being able to show that we cared to keep them on the payroll. And for some of them, it was almost 5 month period before their locations reopened as well too. And I think the demographic, our demographic of doctors is going to be more focused on not just work-life balance, but also companies that are taking care of them. And I think that will also impact the profession as well too. I think those are the key changes. Some of this will tie back into what we were talking about, about hiring and things like that earlier. But those are the key things that I think will really start to change that optometric environment. From a provider perspective, obviously optometrists are getting more scope in some states as well too. So there's the 4 or 5 states now that allow these to be able to do minor surgical procedures as well. So I do foresee that we'll continue to expand that, which I think is great, obviously, for the profession, but great for the community as well too, right? It dovetails really well with our core values of being able to provide affordable and accessible care there as well.
Prathil, you know, when I take a look at your career, like, you know, you mentioned this earlier, and I kind of want to touch on that, right? Like, you've had a really remarkable career. Not only were you serving, your degrees are one thing to begin with, and we can talk a little bit about that. But I think what's really fascinating is, you know, you started off working at, I believe it was called Iris Vision Group, and working, there as both an optometrist and ultimately becoming the chair of the group. And then, as we mentioned, you were working as a director of health and wellness at Walmart, and now you're serving as a senior director of medical and professional affairs. And each of those steps requires a lot of insights, experience, courage, to be honest with you, to try something new. You know, what are some of the things that you think would be helpful for people that, you know, to understand, like, when you accepted the role that you're currently in, like, what were things that you looked at to decide if they aligned with your objectives and they aligned with your own personal philosophy to say, yeah, I think that this is something I want to do?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, there were two groups of things that I was looking at. Obviously, one on the professional side, would this be the right opportunity for me? You know, what are some of the things I'd learned from it? Would that challenge, are there enough challenges to make it worthwhile, that time and the effort that I'm spending in a company as well too? So I think part of it is always, what am I going to learn from it? What am I going to take from it? Will it help me grow personally and professionally as well too? And then the company itself and their core values and what's important to them, the folks that make up the part of the company is also a really important part. And one little story I always tell people is that when Warby Parker first approached, obviously I'd been keeping close watch on them. You know, they were doing amazing things in the industry, in some aspects disruptive things as well too. And so one of the things that I did as part of the research for the role is that I went and visited multiple locations all over the country. And part of it was, if I was traveling for work and if I had some time, personal time, then I'd try to find a location that was close by and go visit. And it was just amazing to see how happy people were to be there, not just customers and patients, but also the employees there as well too. And I think that made it a very easy decision. It wasn't just one location as well too, it was pretty much all of them. One location might be a fluke, but multiple locations, I think it was more than six, maybe seven locations that I visited. And so it was amazing to see that environment, and that certainly helped there. So I think that research part is important in the company itself. But as I mentioned earlier, the fact that I'd be growing essentially their doctor base in the eye exam part was something not really important because my previous role was an organization that was quite large as well too. But being able to grow it from the ground up into something that sort of matches my vision, the vision of the company, was an exciting opportunity, I think. And things grown from our OD perspective probably four or five times since then. So that part was certainly exciting. The other thing that I did was, of course, met with some of the senior leaders in the company as well. And being able to do that certainly showed how important some of these initiatives were for them. And I believe in access to eye care, to access to healthcare, I believe in the affordability of it. And being able to see that really helped me determine that this was the right company for me to move into. Happy to say that I haven't regretted it even once in that period of time.
And I don't think that you would have had any regrets at all, because Prithil, you're a very strategic person. You think about, you know, what the next steps look like, what the pros, the cons are, the risks, the benefits. That's one of the reasons why you're so successful, is because you can see things from a larger scope and then make strategic plans. Prithil, one of the things that I know about leaders is, you know, usually there's an event or a situation that happens early on in their career that kind of shapes the way they see things. You know, they've experienced something, or they had a moment where, because of that experience or that event, their ability to process information and strategize is usually farther advanced or elevated. Is there an early life lesson that you learned in your career that's shaped you into the professional and the leader that you are today?
You know, I think for me, fortunately, it's been lots of great lessons and from lots of great people as well too. So I really can't pinpoint one particular lesson. However, one thing that always comes to mind, back when I was with Iris, the CEO of the company, founder of the company, very charismatic individual in OD as well too, suddenly passed away at a very young age, like 50s, I believe it was, which was a shock to everyone in that company, definitely a huge shock to me, so someone considered a mentor as well. But it certainly made it apparent to me that, some of those professional goals and the personal goals, never know when things will change. You never know when, you're at the end of your lifetime, and that sometimes it does make sense to move forward, take a chance, stay positive, but move forward, take a chance and move forward with that professional goal that you might have. Take those risks, essentially. So I think that's one of the things that always makes me think about taking that extra risk and moving forward, essentially.
Prithil, thanks for that. And I think it's also important to know that, I'm sure you'll agree that as a leader, we individually are not responsible for our success. We're not smarter than anyone else. It's very rare that we are just magically blessed. We usually have a lot of people that are opening doors for us, teaching us new things, encouraging us, and really paving the way for us to be on that path towards success. I'm curious to know, is there an individual that you would acknowledge or would want to give a credence to on this podcast today as a thank you for all the things that they've done and were probably very instrumental in you getting to where you are today now?
Absolutely. I gained sort of similar sort of response there, in that, it's not just one person. I can think of so many different people that I'm so thankful for to have in my life, whether it's personal or professional. And if I start naming them all, we'll probably be here for, probably a couple of days at least. But, you know, I think there's so many people that immediately come to mind, and whether it's people that I think are very highly from my family, my uncles in particular, that have been super supportive, but have always provided great advice to my dad, parents, obviously. But at the same time, different mentors in the past of people that I've worked with, people that I've worked for, you know, I think you learn from everyone, right? And whether it's people that report to you directly, people that you report to. But thinking about, you know, at least this last couple of years with Warby Parker, I think one of the most important lessons from my supervisor, my current boss, is how important it is to lead with empathy as well. And of course, years of the company that showed that how important it is to really stick to your core values and do good efforts, you know, despite some challenging moments as well. And I think all of those sort of combine and create that push, right? That whether it's a lesson, whether it's all these individuals, that all of these parts sort of help you push you forward.
What is the mentor's name that you are referring to right now, your current supervisor?
So my current supervisor's name is Sandy Gilsonen. She's a senior VP for retail operations.
Excellent. Well, I always want my guests to be able to acknowledge them by name, because I think it's important that mentors know the impact they have on the people that they've taken under their wing. So I appreciate you sharing that with me. You know, we've talked about quite a bit about your professional journey, the different things that you have done with Warby Parker, and just, you know, some of the interactions that you're having with your team. You know, I'm always curious to know, like, as an individual with a team, you know, people look to you for guidance. And then in the same vein, you're probably reaching out to learn other ways to not only grow professionally, as we all do, but for personal enrichment as well. I'm a big podcast listener. I enjoy hearing other people's perspectives and learning new bits of knowledge. Yeah. I'm curious to know, what is a resource for you when you think of your own personal growth that you would recommend to others, or that you currently recommend to others to learn new ways of interacting with the world, or just becoming a better person?
Yeah, I actually like to read a lot. So I tend to get a lot of my information, not so much from podcasts, well, though I always listen to yours, but more from reading more than anything. But of course, as you know, time can be, having enough time to read can be a little bit difficult. So I do subscribe to a couple of, essentially they're summary websites. And one of them is called SoundView. And what they do is they summarize books in 8 pages or less. And so what I will generally do is I'll have a read through and see, okay, is this a book that I will like reading, that I'll enjoy reading, that I'll get something? Sometimes it does mean that, you know, the spoilers are in there as well too, the main points are in there. But it's been a great way to figure out, okay, I liked reading this, I want to know more about it, and then I'll go and read through that particular book. Often it becomes hard if you start reading a book and then realize, hang on, it's maybe not as good as you thought it would be, or maybe not as interesting. And I always find it hard to just leave a book halfway through. And so I found this to be great, because even if I don't actually read that particular book from cover to cover, just having that summary means that at least I'm learning something about it as well. I think there's so many places nowadays that can help. So often if I want to know something a little bit more, I might go to Coursera or Udemy or something like that as well. But in particular, having a couple of these book summaries has been great. Because obviously it's a great time saver, and then I can focus in on those that I would like to learn a little bit more about.
I'll have to check that out. And I used to read a lot, and then all of a sudden one day I just stopped. I just found that it was not as rich of a medium for myself. So, I mean, whatever works for everyone.
Whatever works, right?
It's whatever works, whatever allows you to pick up new information, process it, and then start using it in everyday life, that's all that matters.
Agreed. And I think for me, reading helps me retain information more. But obviously different people are different, whether it's visual or more auditory as well too, right? So Agreed. As an optometrist, I guess the visual part makes more sense for me.
Yeah, actually, that's a no-brainer for both of us. Excellent. Well, Prathil, you've shared a lot of great insights. You've talked to us a lot about, you know, some of the advice that you have learned and the advice that you give to others about taking risks, about being open. Is there anything else that you would share with the listening audience today that are looking to try to advance their career? You know, is there one final piece of advice that you could, if you could go back and talk to yourself and say, hey, Prathil, there's a world out there for you, and this is what you should be doing now to move yourself forward. What would that piece of advice be?
Yeah, absolutely. I think if I had to go back 10, 15, 20 years, I think one of the things I tell myself, and hopefully your listeners will agree with this. I think, you know, no matter what your dream role is or your where you want to get to, you will hear no multiple times, right? You might fail multiple times. So I think it's important to make sure that you don't let it keep you down, that you keep a positive attitude, stay persistent, keep learning, you know, continue to take that feedback. Doesn't matter where that feedback's coming from. Doesn't matter if you don't like the person where you're getting that feedback from or the type of feedback, but there's usually great pearls of wisdom in a lot of these feedbacks. So take the learnings that come with it. And then build your grit as well too, right? And, you know, when you have setbacks and failures, you have to make sure that you're not overreacting to it. You need to be able to step back and learn from that as well too. But also, always, you know, staying positive as well. I think that's one part. The other part is that people first approach is super important. And I read something somewhere some time ago that has always stuck with me, and that's work hard and be nice to people, especially young people. And I think that part is super important as well.
I couldn't agree more. Prathil, thanks so much for being on the show. You've been a phenomenal guest. I'm excited and really happy to reconnect with you and have you share the insights that you've shared on this show. I'm wishing you nothing but success in 2022, and I look forward to hearing how you continue to take healthcare to a higher level.
Thank you so much. It was great chatting with you. Had lots of fun, and look forward to chatting more down the track.
Thanks for joining me on this episode of the Healthcare and Higher podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to follow and subscribe for more. I'm your host, Iqbal Acha, and I invite you to connect with me on LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter. Let me know what you thought about this episode or my show in general. Also, visit me at www.achainternational.com to learn more about how I help healthcare professionals and healthcare leaders advance their career, build a better brand, and create a leadership legacy. I'll be back next week with another episode. But until then, let's keep working to take healthcare to a higher level.